Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Don't Give Up, Space Cowboy, the podcast that has been carving animals into the face of planets because they're lonely since 1998. I am your host, Jeremy Greer. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Chris Mosier. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. What's going on, my man?
Just having a good time watching some Cowboy Bebop, Chris. I am still in love with this show. I don't know if you know that.
Hell yeah.
We talk about this show quite a bit.
This whole time I've been thinking, you know, there's been a core piece missing, and we finally got that missing piece on this first episode.
We're finally there. We are recruiting. Is this the final member of the Bebop?
This is the final member of the Bebop.
I'm very excited about this episode. Before we get into it, I just want to thank all of our patrons at patreon.com/monsterofthe week. You guys made this happen, and that's why we are releasing this exclusively to you, and not for any kind of shameful capitalism money grab thing at all. Like, it was just for you as a reward for you guys helping us support the network. No, I'm not on DuckFeed TV right now. Support the show and support me and Chris. So thank you for all of that. You want to just get into some fucking Bebop, man?
Let's do it.
I want, before we get into the actual episode, I have actually been rewatching this. So as of this recording, none of these episodes are public yet. Only a limited number of people have listened to them. One of those people was Autumn, of course. So she's been listening.
One of those people is also me.
Yeah, and you, yes. and like two other trusted advisors. So Autumn's been listening to it, and she listened to the first one, and she was like, Jeremy, you're in love with the show, I can tell. And I was like, yeah, it's a fucking great show. She goes, I gotta watch it. So we've watched the first four episodes, because she told me she was not gonna listen to any more of the podcast. It's like, you're a test listener, you kind of have to do this. But until she had watched the episodes that we're covering. And I was a little nervous. Autumn has a kind of a similar history with anime. Like, she's an open-minded person. But I was a little bit nervous, because as good as the show is, I just didn't know if it would hold up very well for some reason. I was just nervous about it. Mm-hmm. And she totally fucking fell in love with it. And I'm just going back and listening to it. I feel like we could redo this series. And I'm not saying we should do this, but I'm saying, like, in 5 years, we could rewatch Don't Give Up. We could rewatch Cowboy Bebop and re-record Don't Give Up Space Cowboy Volume 2 and talk about so much different shit. I feel like we are missing a ton of stuff.
It's weird where we always joked about Supernatural, like, we don't want to have to do a 2-hour podcast on 45 minutes of TV, which we've gotten close to doing a couple times, but it seriously feels like we could do a 2-hour podcast on 22 minutes of TV with Cowboy Bebop, because there's so much detail in every single scene of the show. It's honestly ridiculous.
Yeah, if we wanted to really drill into all of the wonderful, like, small bits of animation, both foreground and background, if we wanted to get into a lot of the themes, if we wanted to get into all of the references they're doing, like, at the very beginning, I was kind of skimming the wiki to see if I could bring some of those out, we could talk about them, and I just, it's overwhelming. Like, it is 22 minutes per episode, and it is crammed, packed full of goodness. So it's kind of amazing, is what I'm saying.
It's pretty extraordinary. It's a good show. Let's put it that.
Chris, this is a good show.
Pretty good.
The episode that we're covering today is Jamming with Edward. This was written by Dai Soto. Something is carving giant pictures on the Earth's surface, and the Earth police put out a bounty, drawing in...
Earth police.
A talented computer hacker, Edward, is rumored to be the culprit, but the truth is much different. This is the first time we've seen Earth. So we're on episode 9, and this is our first Earth. I've been curious about what's been happening with Earth, because in most sci-fi, even if we're exploring in space, either Earth has been destroyed, or it's the center of the galaxy, or it's like the cradle of humanity for some reason. Or not for some reason, because it's fucking Earth, that's where we're born. So this is really exciting when I read this description. I was really pumped about it.
It's funny because Earth is just sort of almost like the trailer park. Like, it's not like post-apocalyptic, it's not destroyed, and neither is it the cradle of humanity. It's just sort of like there, and there's not a lot there. People still live there, but like, it's kind of shitty because the atmosphere is worn thin, and there are just meteor showers constantly. So it's a kind of a unique, not necessarily unique, but it's an interesting depiction of planet Earth.
I totally agreed with you. It's really fun. We're gonna find some lore out in this episode,
which
I got really excited about. Let's just get into it. So we start with a look of like a what looks like a digital eye, and we get some like voiceover text that says, "Here, always here, never alone." And then as the camera pulls out, we realize this is a satellite floating in space. It's surrounded by space debris, like rocks and things. And then it starts shooting a laser into the planet below, and it's like carving out these pictures of animals, which is pretty
insane. When we first saw the eye, I was thinking of that flashback that Spike had.
Yep, me too.
In the episode with the little kid with the harmonica. That was, and I wonder if they intentionally sort of mislead you for half a second. But yeah, as soon the first thing that I wrote down with the pictures that it's carving into Earth with this laser was that it looks like the Nazca lines or the whatever they're called, which are in the Nazca Desert in Peru, I think. Somebody in this episode mentions that term at some point in this episode, but it immediately, like, it stuck out to me because lots of people think that it's UFOs or something funky like that. Really, it's just intricate, weird drawings of animals in the earth that nobody really knows how they got there.
Exactly.
But it's weird that it's just like, that's what this thing is doing.
Yeah, it is very strange. And like, if this is, and I like the setup too, because for most of the episode they're going to blame Edward on this, and this is the kind of prank that like a kid hacker would do, right? Like he would hack over this major satellite network and then use it to carve, you know, a middle finger or like a really lame crude penis into like the ground of South America, what used to be South America, which is what they're going to say in a few minutes. We're introduced to Edward, who is kind of positioned to be a dude throughout this, but is revealed later to be a girl. She's just kind of laying out on this rock next to a satellite, listening to a weather report, which is basically, hey, everything's clear. And then what I thought was a missile at first. Oh, no, wait. She's looking at the virtual net, like, in her glasses, which is the coolest and dumbest and goofiest, like, virtual internet interface.
Yeah, it's techno-computer space hacker world.
Oh,
yeah.
It's so good. I love it. Yeah, I love that stuff.
There's a couple things here that, first... she's listening to the weather, and there's just like weather reports about like meteor showers, which I think is funny. And then I think it like updates to like, nope, sorry, right now it's happening. and the other thing that I just always notice when I watch anime is the cicada hiss of like the sound that cicadas make. It's in so many anime because I think that cicadas are really prevalent in Japan in the summer months, and we get them here too, obviously, but it's not as common and frequent of a thing. So now whenever I hear that, I always associate it with like watching anime when I was a kid. So when I heard it here on Cowboy Bebop, it immediately just made me think of like, this is the anime cicada thing, which I love. I love it as an effect. It immediately like sets a tone for me of like these hot, boring days where nothing's happening and everything is slow and the sun is setting, and like it paints a picture. And then we see Edward diving into hack zone.
Is this the Wilhelm scream like of anime? Like, does it the same
cicada kind of
sound effect? the hack zone, the virtual internet, whatever you want to call it, is
Hacktopia.
It's like this weird GUI interface. GUI interface is kind of like saying ATM machine. It doesn't make any sense. It's this weird GUI of like browsing these, like this blue background, and like all of these like sites and access panels and all this kind of stuff is going by it. It really, really super fast. And it's very much a late 90s like dream of future internet, which I can really get behind. Yeah. That's some of my favorite shit in the world. Like old futurism is really interesting to me.
And this show is so much of that.
Yeah. And like a lot of it really works. Like a lot of it works surprisingly well. And you know, this is very goofy, but it's still very charming.
I think it's because it's tonally consistent. Even when they're diving into into Hacktown, it's like the Hacktown through the eyes of like a really eccentric, silly little girl who has an eccentric version of what like hacking on the internet looks like. I assume. I don't know. Yeah. It just makes sense. The pieces go together well.
As she's running through these different panels, it's revealed that she's looking for the Bebop, and we find out that the Bebop is nearby. Right as that happens, what I thought was a missile comes crashing down, and it's revealed to be to be an asteroid or like a meteor. But it hits very close to her, and that's when the weather report updates. It's like meteor storm chance 99%. Like, oh really?
Yeah.
Thanks. Over on the. On the Bebop, they're watching the news and kind of going through their normal like slice of life routine. When the newscaster starts interviewing this Yuri Kellerman, who is basically It Was Aliens guy from the History Channel,
but
10 years too early for the meme. He talks like in that weird kind of Igor voice, and I think it's the aliens. It's really strange, and he's saying that
he's going through all of like the real. alien Nazca line theories that people have. And the newscaster was like, okay, buddy, sure thing. Here's what's really doing it.
Yeah, that's the funniest part to me, is the newscaster is like, oh, really? That's interesting, because the government is saying it's a series of satellites that are orbiting in space that they have lost control over. And they think that, they actually think that it's this one specific actor. They've released an 8 million bounty Wulong, or 8 million Wulong bounty on him. What do you think about that? Like, it was aliens, man. It was aliens. of course, Kellerman thinks that the bounty is a government cover-up.
Of course.
It's so strange to me, and Bebop is really great at this, where they bring these characters to the screen, and they give them so much personality, and they're there for like 45 seconds to a minute, yeah. Right?
they're swept aside. But yeah, there's this obviously a big bounty on whoever has hacked this satellite. So Jet and Faye's ears perk up, because they're always down for a good old-fashioned bounty. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, Spike is just like, this is boring, I'm not interested, I don't care. Hackers are small fries. Like, there's nothing exciting about going after a hacker. Well, Spike, what do you know?
Well, and Faye says, well, spikers, wow, that's a word. Faye kind of argues and is like, well, I mean, like, hackers may be boring, but they're easy to catch because they're, like, you know, fat and stinky. I think she says, this one's probably a demented otaku with smelly feet.
Mm-hmm. Nerdy, pasty, tubby little geeks with triple thick glasses, and this one is probably a demented otaku with smelly feet. She really fantastic. Gets colorful with
damn,
the language.
Faye, did you lose someone in the war? Is that what's happening right now?
Faye's got a grudge against some nerds.
I think at this point, Jet and Faye kind of have this exchange, and this is going to lead into something that happens in the next episode as well, where Jet kind of makes a kind of side-handed comment about her age, and she just crushes his foot. Like, for as much as Spike says that he doesn't like women and he doesn't want them on a ship, Jet and Faye seem to be the ones that actually argue the most.
Yeah. And it's still, it's at this point feeling good-natured. Mm-hmm. Even though they've only known each other for a few episodes, it very much starts to feel like this crew has been together for years, and we're just getting a window into that.
Exactly, yeah. And we don't know how much time has passed. Well, actually, we'll find out in a little while. It's been a couple of weeks since the last episode, really, so it's not a lot of time has passed. We go to another news report, and this is where we're going to get our big lore dump. Just a few minutes ago, we got this picture of the Earth surrounded by this ring of asteroids, which obviously doesn't exist in right now. And it's one of those images that's kind of just seared into my mind from this, because, like, what, why? And this is where they go through the history of what happened on Earth. So apparently there was a jump gate accident. We've seen jump gates in the past as how these ships approach and get away from the planets. The jump gate accident blew up the moon? Right? Did I get that right?
Shit happens, man. Shit happens.
That's a bummer for the tides. and it peppered the almost the entirety of Earth with space debris, with asteroids and meteors and whatnot. Hey, science nerds out there, I don't actually know the difference between an asteroid and a meteor. I think a meteor is when it crashes to Earth, and an asteroid is when you get off my dick about science terms. So maybe you can at me at Local Bones on Twitter to kind of talk about that. So the damage was so severe that all of the people living on Earth had to flee to underground tunnels, and they built these series of humongous underground tunnels. They built these huge supercomputers, which they used to launch satellites in space so that they could communicate with the outside world. And some of these supercomputers and some of these satellites, they've lost control with. Mm-hmm. And it became kind of a target for hackers to take over these satellites and do things with them. And it created a new breed of hacker, which I think is hilarious.
So from there, we're kind of just like led into an update from the cops, from Earth cops, and they're looking for this person called Radical Edward. And at this point in the episode, we don't know that Edward is the little kid that we already saw earlier in this episode.
Yeah, I just, before we get a little too far from this, I want to hear young Chris as he heard this history of Earth and like the series of shit that went down, because I gotta say, I loved this last night. Like, when I was watching this, I was really into it.
I think that young Chris probably, his eyes glazed over. He probably wasn't interested in the history of Earth back then. I think first time going through Cowboy Bebop, I was still just like, I think Edward was the distraction for me, because I knew that Edward was going to be a main character, because Edward was on the cover of the DVD box set that I had.
Spoilers. Wow. Yeah. Thanks, Blockbuster.
Yeah, what the fuck? But yeah, I think that was probably what I was most focused on. As adult Chris is a lot more interested in the ridiculous science behind how Earth got to be the way that it is. Even when you were just like retelling it and the idea of this gate accident, and I started to think like, wow, it would really suck to be the person who caused that accident that then ended up destroying basically the entire Earth and changing Earth society as we know it because of like some little thing that maybe went wrong. My imagination kind of went a little bit wild with that, which is, it's fun because we get the history of how this happened, but we don't get the details, and that allows us to kind of fill it in ourselves. And that's a great thing that Cowboy Bebop does with sort of everything. Even when we're starting to get the history of Spike and Vicious, we don't have any of the details.
So I'm curious, Chris, as you were imagining the person that that made this mistake with the jump gate that caused a huge amount of property damage, that caused the destruction of probably hundreds of thousands of human lives, livestock, probably threw the world economy into craziness, did all of these terrible things that literally changed the history of Earth over in a space of a couple of minutes. Do you think it was Sam or Dean?
Well, this sounds more like a Sam joint. Some you would fuck up. So yeah, I gotta go with Sam. You're gonna go with Sam? Sorry, buddy.
I'm gonna say that it was probably Dean in the effort of trying to save Sam from something else.
Sure.
I think it could be either.
Maybe it was Piccolo blowing up the moon to stop Gohan from turning into a giant monkey. Who knows?
Chris, we are not talking about anime right now.
So anyway. Radical Edward, this little kid, is able to hack into...
So this is where the cops track down Radical Edward, who they've had this bounty on. And Radical Edward is just like chilling in this like abandoned room, like flying a drone around with a remote control. Mm-hmm. And I really like when the cops bust in and she just literally takes over their vehicle. And they're both like, what? That's impossible. Not for Radical Edward, it's not.
Not for Radical Edward, you dweebs.
Then the Bebop lands on Earth, and Chris, I've talked about this before, but I will literally never ever get tired of watching these spaceships land on water. I think it is the coolest shit in the world. Like the sound and the way that it just kind of casually slips in is so cool.
Yeah, somebody was like a plane buff on the animation team, and they were like, I love the way that planes look when they fly, and I'm gonna put painstaking detail into making these ships land.
Exactly right. And on the Bebop, Faye kind of lands out the plan. So she's going to go look at all of these transmitters that communicated with these satellites, while Jet goes to find out more about the local hackers in the area and figure out if they can figure out who it is. And Spike is just straight up napping. And I think this is where Radical Edward starts hacking the Bebop.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, because it's just Spike there. He's just trying to chill out. Mm-hmm. She hacks in. Her face shows up at the TV. Scares the shit out of Ayn, the dog.
I love that Ayn rolls up to this hacked computer and starts barking at it. Good dog. Good dog, Ayn.
Yeah. And now, I don't know it cuts back, I think, to Faye and Jet. They're searching around, asking people in whatever little shanty towns there are, going from person to person, asking about this person called Radical Edward, trying to get some details, and just about everybody gives an entirely different description of who this person is.
Yeah, and they run the gamut of, or Jet runs the gamut of people he can interview. There's like stoner dude, there's Asian guy, New York lady, small child, large child, like there's a bunch of different people, and they all have different things to say, which is kind of cool. I like this idea of building a mythos for Edward.
Mm-hmm. And then we get Ed doing more hacking, which is what a lot of this episode is Ed hacking into shit, where she starts to hack into the satellite. And she realizes that no one has actually been hacking into this before. Like, she's the first one. So it hasn't been some rogue hacker. It hasn't been Ed, who up until this point, I guess we were led to believe, was the one doing it.
Yes.
Nobody has hacked the satellite, so it's just been sort of operating on its own.
And Edward is surprised when she hears the voice that we heard at the first episode saying, never alone. And
yeah.
this satellite, this AI, introduces itself to Ed as the central processing unit on the D-135 artificial satellite. And Edward promptly renames him MPU because he's cute.
Yeah. And Ed also reveals her extremely long made-up name that I couldn't even write down to this day. I've seen this show like a gazillion times, but I only know her as Edward.
It's I'm reading this from the Wikipedia, and I'm going to butcher some of this. It's Edward Wong Howe Papulu Tversky the Fourth.
Fantastic.
The trivia section on that page also says it's a hint at how eccentric she is. So.
Oh, it's quite the little hint. And even while she's saying it, she's like doing like somersaults back and forth. She's the most anime character, and by that I mean she's the most like cartoon character.
Yes.
She does lots of crazy animated things that like a human wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
I was also reading a while back that she is based on Yoko Kanno, who is the composer. She made all the music for the show. The director based Edward's behavior on the musician's behavior. Because apparently she was just a wacky person.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, they... her and MPU, the satellite that she's affectionately named, they start to get to know each other. And they start to talk about Earth, and it seems like they're dipping into some philosophical conversations when the police suddenly jam the signal.
Yeah, and the MPU has enough time to tell Edward that the reason that it did all of this damage, the reason it created these carvings, is because the carvings used to be there and it when the humans were on the planet, and it just got lonely and wanted something to look at, so it carved it.
Yeah,
and
it's like drawing friends.
Sure, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And then killing like 1,000 animals while you're trying to...
it's, you know, a small price to pay.
Back on the Bebop, Jet has brought back these weird egg souvenir things. Like, this is so set up as a gag that I felt like it was just going over my head. I didn't, or is it just as simple as, like, this is a weird souvenir from Earth because Spike wanted one?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, they're just always doing weird things to, like, add color to the things that they're doing. It's like a little detail that you can't tell if it is the setup for something or if it's just a detail. They do come up later, and I think Edward just eats all of them, whatever they are, but I didn't make any notes about it.
But everybody kind of shares their information. Basically, Jet says, you know, he's a 6 foot tall, 5 year old Babylonian who plays basketball, and like it's just it's all over the place. And then Faye is just basically like, hey, yeah, like all of these transmitters are active. Like, I think something fishy is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Radical Edward once again breaks into the Bebop's channel and kind of informs them about what's happening with the MPU. And Edward says, hey, I'll help you out, but you have to promise me one favor.
Yeah. And Faye is like, I'm a fucking liar, and I absolutely do not give a shit. Of course I'll give you a favor after you help us.
Sure, yeah, that's no problem. I love how dirty Faye is with this stuff. She has no honor. She is dishonorable.
She doesn't even blink.
No, she doesn't even question this.
It's funny, like, I was just telling you how I was reading Harry Potter, and, like, I'm having some, like, reflections about, you know, Harry generally does the right thing, but sometimes he's kind of a jerk about it. He's not always the nicest guy, and he will lie to people, like, to spare them their feelings, or, like, because he doesn't want to reveal the truth or whatever, but he always struggles for half a second, like, ugh, this feels kind of crappy, but I gotta lie to you. And just, you see somebody like Faye, a totally different type of character. I don't know why I'm fucking comparing Faye Valentine to Harry Potter, but...
Well, I mean, you'd be pretty right if it was book 7 Harry Potter. Like, it's just that first half of the book where he's, like, just being mean to Hermione the entire fucking thing. Oh, my God. You're exhausting teenage god,
paying off his gambling debt. Listen, he was under the influence of the Horcrux, Jeremy. The fact that I have to even explain that to you. All right.
It's too bad we don't do outtakes on this podcast, right?
I know.
We can get to a whole thing.
Keep that in now.
So Edward has a plan. He says that if they get close enough to the if they need to kill the transmitters on this satellite,
because
if they kill the transmitters,
the
it won't
link,
be able to
right.
Yeah, it won't be able to get out to the outside world and control the other satellites that all for some reason are equipped with death lasers. Seems like a bad plan to put those out above Earth. So, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, a little risky, but hey, I mean. Shit's not going well anyway.
Edward also kind of proves that he knows all about them. Like, he starts like laying out like, yeah, last week you were doing this and the week before you were doing that, but now I know all of your money is gone. Edward tells them that they to get to these transmitters, they can't use any kind of computer system or else the AI will be able to take over it. Spike is unreasonably excited to be able to do
this
manually.
Oh, fuck yeah. No tracking systems, like none of this fancy technology. I just gotta fly my plane mechanically. Like, I'm into it.
And you know, when we first started watching this, I feel like every episode had a thing about Spike falling into something almost by accident, and then mm-hmm. working his way out of it with cool moves, basically, whether yeah, that was yeah. you're flying or whatever. And we've had some of that, but it didn't feel quite as it felt more mission based, if that makes more sense. And right. this definitely feels like he's like, yeah, this is my jam. Let's go.
Absolutely.
3, 2, 1. Let's jam. So I was really excited to see Spike get excited about this.
Hell yeah. So when you think about like this plan that they have and they start to show it all, this is really, really cool. I always forget this part of the episode because my focus is on, you know, getting introduced to Edward, the final member of the Bebop crew for the rest of the show. But when they get out into space and there are just these, I don't know if I'm skipping a scene or not, these hundreds of satellites with their lasers pointed everywhere, and then Spike just very slowly like tilting his ship back and forth, floating closer and closer to the intended target. It's very cool, and it's very silent, very still. I love the way that they compose these scenes.
And there's that soft whirring noise as he like mm-hmm. readjusts his angle of approach, where it's very much like a mechanical. I'm playing, you know this, but the time of recording, the big update to No Man's Sky came out. And one of the things I like about No Man's Sky is that if you're sitting in your spaceship in space and you just move a little bit to look around, like you don't hit your engines or anything, it makes mm-hmm. this exact same noise. So it literally goes and it feels very cool. That's I also good. Really like the fact that Spike and Jet had to work together to rewire his does his outside ship, does his like mini ship have a name? Does that ever come up? Do you know?
Spike's ship.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Swordfish.
Okay, so they had to rewire the Swordfish to be able to be even run manually, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And Spike doesn't do a whole lot in this episode, and I kind of like that Spike doesn't do a whole lot. I like that they just decide a main character doesn't give a shit about what's going on until it suits him, and then until he's like, oh, okay, that sounds like fun, this ridiculous action man challenge that I so enjoy doing.
Yeah, until something fucking crazy happens, and he's like, yes, yeah, I'll be in.
Yeah. It adds some character to him because he's a ridiculous person.
So he manages his approach and he starts to begin to aim and charge up his weapon. And we've seen him fire this before. I don't know if that we got into the detail of like the way that this animation looks, but it's fucking beautiful. I'd mm-hmm. really enjoy like the way that it, like charges up and like kind of moves back and forth and then just spits out his one giant laser beam. Dope. Love it.
Yep, fuck yeah.
But unfortunately, the MPU kind of noticed his approach and moved some other satellites in the way to block him. So mm-hmm. Now Faye has to get in there. They both turn their computers on, and it's an all-out attack as all of the satellites around them wake up. Lasers start flying everywhere, and they have to somehow defeat this evil AI in the middle of space and stay alive at the same time.
It's very funny to me that throughout all this, Faye starts firing off her missiles, all this stuff is going down, and like the missiles aren't hitting where they need to hit, they're being blown up or whatever, and Jet is just like, oh no, this is what happens when you buy cheap shit. Like, these cheap, bargain-priced missiles that I bought aren't doing the trick now. Just to, you know, even when they're getting bounties and making a little bit of money, there's still like Jet is just a little bit too frugal for his own good. Bell peppers yep. without the beef or whatever, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. Same thing here. He's just bought discount missiles and it's backfiring on him.
It's hilarious. Edward eventually comes on the line and tells them like, "Hey, you need to get close enough and then jack me in and I can take over the AI."
Yeah, if they get close enough, the other satellites won't fire at them because they don't want to destroy the main one.
And but Faye should be the one to be the distraction in all of this. And Faye's like, "Why me?" And he's like, and Edward just says, I don't know. It's just you. You're good at this. Like, there's no answer whatsoever. Like, I think she just wanted Faye to do it.
Yeah. It's as if the show wasn't chaotic enough. As if this group of people wasn't chaotic enough. Interjecting Edward, this insane child, into the mix is beautiful.
Are we selling how crazy Edward is during all of this?
I don't know. We like Edward is wearing like a big white t-shirt and like short black shorts. It has like spiky like orange red hair with big old goggles, and she's just got like giant red circles drawn on her cheeks. Like she has rosy cheeks. Like she is a ridiculous looking anime character, and she almost looks like she's got stretchy arms. Like she doesn't, but yeah. She's so lanky and just hopping around all the time. And it seems like the show really, like, we're going to get lots more of Edward in the future. Spoilers. The show just really takes pleasure in having Ed around doing really wacky stuff.
So luckily the plan works. Faye distracts the AI long enough for Spike to get close. Spike jacks Edward in. Edward says, "Hey, there's a bounty on you. Let me clone your AI. Why don't you come with us? And then I'll give the old clone to the police department, and they can deal with you. But at least this way that you'll survive." And then the MPU eventually agrees to this and like downloads itself into Edward's glasses, which kind of knocks Edward on her ass. Like, just like, ah, that's a big shock. This doesn't come up again yet in this episode or the next episode of like, they have this weird sentient AI running around on the Bebop.
I don't remember if it
comes up again. I mean, does it ever, or does it just, is it just chilling?
I don't remember.
Literally does not matter. Like, I'm perfectly satisfied with it not ever coming up again. So.
I don't remember. But yeah, she says they can be friends. The AI lets, because the AI said it was, you know, there alone, always alone, whatever it is. It was drawing its own friends. So she says, okay, we can be friends, you and I. So come on in. She downloads it. But like you said, she gets sort of like fried by the download.
And this is where we find out that they've always said that this was a weather satellite gone weird, but it turns out it was a spy satellite. And it was, they don't say this, but they show like an old United States flag on this. So this was a satellite that was put up here that had commands to, basically to, as long as it was receiving commands from a home base to be cool. And as soon as it stopped receiving those commands, it went fucking crazy.
Right. Right. But there's never, so they do get some sort of background on it, but there's never an explanation for why it was doing what it was doing, for why it was like redrawing the Nazca lines. And Edward just says that it was lonely, so it drew some friends. At least I think it was Edward. I didn't write down the speaker, but it was lonely, so it drew some friends. That Spike, was this whole thing.
That's actually a Spike joint.
Wow.
When they're leaving the police department, Jet asks, it's like, I wonder why it made all those animals. And Spike's like, that's easy. It was lonely. Like, Spike having like this natural understanding of this alien, not alien, this weird isolated AI, I think is a really, just the little that we know about his history, I think that kind of tells you something about him and his perception. Yeah.
Another droplet of color onto Spike's past or Spike's self, I guess.
At the end of the episode, Edward is basically kind of waiting. She's got all of her like gear with her, and she says like, oh, okay, come over here and pick me up. And Faye's like, no, what are you doing? Talking to Jet, just leave. Like, you know, the promises were made to be broken, especially this one.
Yeah.
And just buzz past her to leave
sad.
Him.
Edward is just like not taking Edward. Like, we should also say that she says her own name all the
constantly
time. She refers to
talks
herself
about her
in the
third person all the time.
Yeah.
But of course this doesn't work because Edward has already hacked the Bebop twice. Yeah. So doing it so a third time to use her little remote control to bring them right back is no problem for her whatsoever, which results in this like the great time of Spike, Faye, and Jet all going like, why are we going so fast downwards? What's happening? Really fun.
We learned that, you know, the promise that or the favor that Faye said she could do for Ed was to let her be a full member of the Bebop. When she tried to break her promise, Ed pulls her back, and they're forced to pick her up and let her join the crew. So it seems like, okay, relatively happy ending. They did their thing, and they picked up a new member. But as they're driving away, Big Shot comes on the TV, the Bounty Hunter show, and it just reveals that because there was not an actual hacker involved in this, it was just the AI, that there's no bounty.
Yeah, because AIs are not considered sentient, and therefore they can't be tried or persecuted. So basically it's a legal loophole for the government to get out of paying them the $8 million, which sucks and is about what we expect from Cowboy Bebop at this point.
Right, right.
There's a conversation between Spike and Jet where he asked Jet, you know, what is happening? Like, you know, the three things that I hate the most are kids, animals, and women with attitudes. And our ship is filled with all three. Yeah. And this is at the point where we hear in the background Faye and Edward kind of yelling at each other. Edward's laughing, Faye's yelling. And Faye says, oh, you're a girl. And as they fly away from Earth, you know, the planet rotates a little bit so that we can see the face of South America. And Edward has drawn her like face,
giant
her hacker face yeah
thing,
her tag
yeah.
on it, and which is really yeah. great, so enjoy yeah. that, Brazil. Sorry,
enjoy that, planet fucking Earth.
But what a great episode. Like, introducing this character, finding out about Earth, the action in it is really good, although it's a little bit less fighty than I think we're used to. But the whole combat scene with the satellite is so fucking beautiful and so great. I can't get over it.
Yeah.
This stuff is... Cowboy Bebop continues to excel in almost every way. It's just such the casual way that they came down to Earth. They don't address any of the Earth shit that's going on. Like, it's color in the background. That's about all we get. But, like, none of the cast is concerned about the state of Earth. None of this is a revelation to them. They don't really care about Edward, but somehow at the end of the episode, she ends up on their crew, and it just is what it is. And it's that same easy come, easy go thing that had Faye end up joining up with them.
I like it too. You mentioned that they were kind of dismissive about Earth, and they are. Like, I think at one point Faye even says, you know, it's just Earth. Earth people are weird. Yeah. As if to say, you know, that we weren't born there. Like, we have no connection to this place. It's just some random place that, you know, life maybe started at, but we don't care about it. Now everybody right. there is fucking strange and weird.
Yeah, Spike was born on Mars. So
yeah, and we saw that when we kind of went through our tour of Earth people looking for Edward and seeing all of them. They're all like, they were caricatures, but they were all weirdos. Like, there were nobody there that you wanted to sit down and have a beer with. Let's just say that.
No.
And yeah. This kind of working lore into your narrative and working this giving you glimpses of a bigger whole, and while it's not necessarily focusing on it, and then also having your characters not focus on it or even really care that much is really, really interesting to me. Like, that's a great way to tell a story.
It takes that Bounty of the Week format and just does so much with it without making it feel like each episode is full of exposition or each episode is a history lesson. It's just, you know, wind blowing through the batwing doors of the saloon back and forth, and that's kind of how we get to look at the world. And it doesn't really matter what's on the other side because we're in here to drink. It's just a very cool show. La-la-la.
And we're back. This one's Ganymede Elegy, written by Akiko Inari. Jet confronts his past on Ganymede, where a woman he loved, Alyssa, had left him without saying goodbye. Spike learns of a new bounty that has a connection to Alyssa. I just want to point this out. She literally says goodbye. It's the only thing she says to him is farewell. Like, I just want to put that out there right off the bat. Just IMDb.com.
Yeah, way to go, this CW.
Actually, I think that was maybe... that would maybe the Wikia on that. I don't remember where I'm pulling these from. So, anyway, this is a Jet origin story.
Goddamn ass. Yeah, I'm surprised that we're getting Jet this early. I pictured this way later in the series, but here we are.
Here's the thing that I like about this episode the most is that it is ostensibly a Jet origin story, similar to the way that Spike, we had that Spike origin story, and we have had one for, you know, Faye and Ayn and Edward now, but it doesn't actually technically explain who these people are. Like, it tells
that's true.
It tells why Jet is on the Bebop. Like, we know that. We don't know why he has a metal arm. We don't know. Like, there's still stuff that we don't know about him. Just like Spike, there's a whole lot of things left untold about that dude. This is going to go a long way to explaining some stuff with Jet, but I don't think that it completely encapsulates him as a character.
Right. It helps you understand who he is. Again, yes. you get history, but you don't get details.
And this is when people talk about origin stories. Like, I have a big problem. I watch, as people know, I watch a lot of superhero bullshit, and I'm kind of done with, for instance, the Spider-Man origin story. I never need to see him, like, get mad at the wrestling promoter and not trip the thief and Uncle Ben dies for the fourth time. Like, I don't need to see any of that ever again. And Marvel did a really smart thing and didn't really show us any of that just recently. This feels kind of like that. Like, it feels like we got dropped in the middle of this, and then later on they explain some of the stuff, but they don't actually, like, straight up tell you. They show you what's happening, which I know that's a common thing that everyone trots out. Show, don't tell. But this is a really good example of making that work, of making me like the character and then showing me things about how that character that I like so much was created and making me like them more.
It helps you connect with Jet on an emotional level when you understand what one event, at least in his past, was. But again, it doesn't tell you Jet was born on Ganymede and he worked really hard and he had a father who was a cop and he followed his foot. Like, it doesn't tell you all of these things. It tells you one little vignette. It gives you one little story, one verse to the entire song that is the life of Jet. And because we've heard that, because we've seen this, now we can connect with Jet. Now we understand a little bit more the way that he is. And, you know, the way that, that was her name, Elisa, reacts to him, it helps us understand how Jet then reacts to other people on the Bebop. And it's, yep. Again, it's done very well.
I may have told you this before, so stop me if I have. There's a skit, I think it was on Saturday Night Live. It could have been just on some random skit show. Of it was basically like the explanation group meeting where like three or four people are standing around at a party and like one guy says, "Hey, what's your name?" It's like, "Oh, I'm Jeremy. This guy over here is my uncle. He," and like explains the uncle's origin story. Like, it's very much, it was like, that's what TV shows do nowadays. Uh-huh. "Oh, hi, yeah, this is my Uncle Mike. Uncle Mike was 1972, Uncle Mike was blah 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 blah." And I like that this show avoids all of that pretty deftly.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just makes me jealous. Of like how cool Cowboy Bebop is and how yes. well it does everything. Like,
yes.
Where do you get off?
How do you like? Here's the thing that really good art makes me mad about. It always looks at me and instead of challenging me to make good art, it just makes me think I will never make good art.
Right.
How did this possibly get
made? How could
made?
I possibly ever do anything yeah. this good in my whole life?
Exactly right.
The other thing that I wonder if we're maybe not giving enough credit to is the dub and the translation, because it feels good. The translation really works well, and I wonder how much of that contributes to how much we appreciate Cowboy Bebop, because of course there's translation or from like Japanese to English, and then there's translation into or interpretation, rather, as the interpretation into like how would an English speaking person say this. And I think that sometimes that is what's lacking in at least around this era, that's what was lacking in some anime, is you're getting a direct translation from the Japanese, so when it's said in English, it sounds a lot clunkier, or it doesn't flow as well, and it kind of muddies the water a little bit, just because it's, you know, two languages with different structures that work differently, and if you just try to ape one, the other isn't going to sound right. But the interpretation that goes into the scripts for these seems like it was handled with great care, and it shows.
Yeah, this is often debated in video games, you know, about the translation teams censoring things or changing things or what have you. One of the best anecdotes I remember is the 8-4 team when they were translating Nier Automata. There's a one particular line in there. That I don't actually want to spoil, but it was the use of an expletive, right? Mm-hmm. And, it was the use of the word fuck. Or actually, I take that back. It was the non-use of an expletive. It was kind of beeped out, basically. This is not just doing a terrible job explaining it, but some people were like, "Oh, that's, you know, that's a lot. I bet they interpreted that and they scaled that up. Like, I bet in the original translation that it's not quite that intense." And they did an interview and they were like, "Actually, in the original, it's way more intense. We thought that would be way too much for it, so we had to kind of interpret it to be able to fit the culture that we were going after," which I thought right. was kind of fascinating. Like, you're absolutely right. The dub is fantastic in getting across everything that like, it feels very natural. It never feels awkward like a bad dub does. Because boy, right. I don't know if we talked about it on a podcast yet, but I watched that Witcher TV show from Poland in the 1990s, and oh boy, just the sub on that, like, it was, there's parts of that show where there is just an entire paragraph of text on top of the screen. You can't see anything but the text. It is ridiculous.
That's how watching like illegal subs for a lot of anime is. It's yeah. just like it's fan translated, so it's people who don't have a firm grasp of writing who understand both languages, and they translate what it said, and you can always tell when people use certain words, like, "Oh, you watch an illegal version of this, you aren't watching the officially translated version," which, whatever, but it's there. I think that it's interpretation is a huge part of it, and it's like an unsung hero of a good anime adaptation.
Yeah, it's somebody with a heart of gold and about 10% of a foreign language degree. Yeah. Just really putting in some work. Right. Well, let's get into the episode. We said
we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, and then here we go.
And 20 minutes on a translation, so we're having a great day today. We start with a bounty head, which I think this is the first episode that they start calling the bounty heads. I don't think we've picked that up before. But
also, this is the first episode that it starts where they've already caught somebody.
Caught the dude. I like that a lot. He's tied up in the Bebop, and Ein is kind of growling at him a little bit when he kicks a can at Ein, and Ein has to like scurry away. Immediately afterward, Edward kind of drops out of the vent above him and then starts flipping around and acting super weird, and then just literally jumps on him and starts biting him as if Edward was a dog, pretending to be a dog. And this bounty hunter has no idea how to handle this shit at all.
No. There's a point where he's almost like blushing.
Yeah.
He's just so like, I don't know if embarrassed or
what is happening right now.
Yeah. It's just Ed being wacky. And then I think from there we just cut to brooding Jed, which is not something that we see a lot of, and he is sort of contemplating this watch in his hand, and he's having a flashback of some sort where he's seeing this watch and he's seeing these images, and he's totally distracted from his surroundings.
Yeah, this pocket watch counts to 15, right?
It's a weird thing to count to.
I'm just wondering, is Ganymede's hours, it's completes revolution in 7 days and 3 hours. I was curious if it was, instead of like a 24-hour day, it had a 30-hour day.
Oh, God. I fucking bet that is some little freaking detail that they put into this goddamn pocket watch, that it's not a 24-hour pocket watch.
A quick Google search does not reveal this for me, but I'm not going to get deep into it. Let's just assume
yeah. that is their deft little detail there.
It also looks very steampunky. Like it's like a leather thing with some iron bracing around it.
It's wearing a top hat and a monocle.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It gender bent the Harley Quinn and Joker cosplay. Sorry.
I hate it so much.
And most notably, it's not running. It stopped working. And as he's looking at it, he starts remembering this thing, and it's having memories. And it's of a woman walking away in the rain. It's gorgeous. I know I keep using gorgeous and beautiful and great. Like, I need to go find a thesaurus and have it out when we do this podcast, because it's the way that it is animated with the rain coming down and her walking away. It's very noir, and it's very just so good looking. Like, I find myself stopping and just staring at the screen while this is on, which of course is what you know I'm supposed to do. And she walks away in the rain, and she leaves behind the watch, which on top of a note or an envelope. We're gonna find out later it's a note. Spike and Faye kind of bring him out of his reverie, and it's like, hey, what are you doing? Like, we got to land on Ganymede and turn in this bounty, and Jet hasn't even, you know, asked for permission to land yet. Like, that's how out of it he is, which is really unusual. Yeah,
they're getting really close, and he's like, oh, fuck, I have to do the whole thing.
And Faye starts kind of ribbing him, like, what are you, you're from Ganymede, right? Like, are you trying to have some memory of something about some sweet thing? And Jet doesn't really respond to this kind of ribbing very well. He's not really into this at all. He's a little prickly. You could kind of tell that they're about to get back into it when they have a phone call from Ganymede.
Yeah, it's the what? I don't know if it's the local cops or if it's just because Jet recognizes whoever it is on the phone, because we're going to learn. I think we may have actually already learned in previous episodes that Jet used to be a cop, and apparently he was a cop on Ganymede.
This is where we learn this.
This is where we learn this. Great. I guess it was just something that Chris knew.
Yeah, this was just something that Chris knew. I was this was a news to me. And Faye comments on it too. She's like, "Oh, that explains it." And Spike says, "What? Like, oh, he's a cop. That's why we don't get along." We also find out that he used to be called the Black Dog, because once he got his teeth in something, he would never let go. Which sounds like something just any dog would do, not necessarily a black dog, so I don't know what's happening there. It's just really weird, like, the nicknames that people, like, come up with sometimes.
Yeah, because I can't help but think how a nickname like that would work in real life, because of course you know people who have nicknames, and it's always like, yeah, you know, why do people call you Bucko? Oh, you know, it's just this one time I did this stupid thing and my buddy said Bucko, and then from then on, it's like none of these stories ever make sense. But then they're like, call him Black Dog because of this metaphor that I'm about to explain to you. We're all very artistic.
I have two friends, Hardcore Chris and Hardcore Chris number two, because we knew two Chrises that were so hardcore that they deserved that moniker, so we had to specify between them. Yeah, nicknames are super dumb, always. I work with a guy named Porky, and the dude's name is, shit,
don't
I can't remember.
Say it.
I can't remember if it's Jason or... I don't remember what his real name is. It's something with a J, but like occasionally he makes deliveries and stuff. And so like, I'll get a phone call. It's like, hey, dude, some guy named Porky just came by. Man, I can't call a grown man Porky. What is that dude's real name? Like, I get that phone call. I've gotten it two or three times so far.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, his cop friend tells Jet that, oh yeah, Alyssa, like, you probably want to know what's happening with her. She's got a bar down, you know, down by the way, and she ran up a bunch of debt to a guy, and you know, you should probably go see her sometime. And Jet's like, yep, that's definitely what I'm going to do, and that's literally the next next scene of the show. Yeah.
The song that plays is really great. It's one of those slow, jazzy numbers that just really fills your heart with whatever the hell is in front of you.
If I can find it, that would probably be the intermission music for this episode.
Mm-hmm. And even like while all that is happening, we get some like intermission stuff with Faye tanning and Edward just being so utterly confused by what is happening here.
The Jet going down to Ganymede and getting all of these slices of life things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
I love this, Chris. Like the workers at the docks, the kind of abandoned streets. Like, it's very much a blue collar, beautiful area. Like, there's this huge, amazing sea, and you know, Ganymede in science fiction is always like the kind of bountiful, like where we're going to grow all of our food, where we're going to get all of our food from. And it's like the way that they have this presented, like it feels alien and familiar at the same time, which is how I feel like a natural colonization of a planet would end up.
Ganymede reminds me a lot of the city of Boston, where there's, you know, it's an old city with history, but you have, you know, skyscrapers, and you have, you know, freaking billionaires, and there's that section of the city. Of course, it's like that in any city. But then there's also the docks, and then there's these abandoned streets and these old corners that people forget about. And, you know, there's a little bar where somebody could hide away and live out their life. And it's just all walks of life. And I'm sure, yeah, again, plenty of cities are like that. But this, especially, you know, being from Boston, it reminds me of that city in a cool way. And we're just getting these little snapshots as Jet sort of heads off down to this bar, to Elisa's.
Yeah, I'm with you. Having spent a total of like maybe 8 days in Boston over my entire life, I can 100% agree with you and tell you that you were right, because it feels very much like that. Boston's a fun city. I should get up to Boston more often.
That's where I live.
So Spike goes
into the bar. Yeah.
Well, no, Spike goes to collect the bounty. We have to have this.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
And as he's
forgot
coming,
all about Spike. Yeah. He's just sort of in the background for most of this episode. It's interesting that he's taken a back seat for what? This is the second episode in a row.
Yeah, of course. I expected him to be the hero guy of this whole thing.
It just, I think that's what's been billed to us for, you know, the first handful of episodes, and now it's letting the rest of the cast, now that they're all collected, it's letting everyone shine a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which I'm grateful for, because like, I think if you just had these guys tagging along with Spike, it would be a much different dynamic.
Right. There's no leader to this group, so Spike can't be leading them places.
Yeah, ostensibly, like, I'm curious who owns the fucking ship.
Like, I guess it's
got to be Spike, right?
I guess it's Jet, rather, but yeah, I don't know.
Spike doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would like be in a position where he could own a ship. It very much feels like a Jet thing, but who knows? So Spike is coming out, and he's confronted by Faye, who starts kind of making fun of Jet for going after his, you know, long lost girlfriend or whatever. And Spike's just like, you know, not every woman is like you. Like, some women are like worth, basically saying worth pursuing, which pisses Faye off quite a bit. And then Jet shows up at this, this is where Faye does our whole like eye candy routine about, and she starts slathering up the suntanning oil, right?
Right. And it's just this, it's a ridiculous eye candy scene that they just throw there, just for the sake of it, I guess.
Here's the thing about this, though, that I kind of like. they incorporate Edward into this in a good way, which mm-hmm. we'll get to in a minute. But like, it's not, it's definitely treated like eye candy. And she's wearing a very tiny, tiny bikini or whatever. But it's not lingered on for any length of time. Like, it's just there, and it's something that this person might actually naturally be doing. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't have anything else to fucking do. She's waiting for the owner of the ship to come back.
Yeah, they just cashed out. She's not interested. There's even the scene of her laying there where the ship, like, blazes by her, and it, like, shakes her hair around everywhere. Because it's just like, she doesn't give a fuck. She's sipping on a martini.
Just having a great time. Yeah, I got paid. I got nothing to do. I'm on one of the most beautiful planets in the world, or beautiful moons in the world. Like, in the solar system, I'm having a great day. I'm going to get a little suntan in.
Yeah.
Ed comes out and asks her, like, you know, why she's doing what she's doing. And she goes into this long thing about that, you know, a perfect skin regimen. To maintain a youthful looking skin, you have to, it's a never-ending bite, never-ending fight that you can't quit, but you never win, or something. Which is I don't know. I'm butchering the quote. I don't
know
if you
wrote it
down.
It's a good line, though.
Yeah, I just think that's funny.
It could have been a throwaway fan service scene. They like still managed to add just a little bit of characterization.
Yeah, like it makes her more of a. Because I'm sure, like, because you date Jess, and I'm obviously married to Autumn. Like, women take that shit extremely seriously, mm-hmm. Way more seriously than I've ever cared about any part of my body whatsoever. Yeah. So, yeah.
Jess is constantly criticizing the very, very slight wrinkles that I have on my face. Like, I'll always be sitting there, like, I don't know if it's because of just my general disposition or my poor eyesight, but I'm always sort of scowling or squinting, and it's like, well, they're watching TV or we're walking, and she'll, like, tap my forehead, and she'll be like, stop doing that. Like, wait,
that's hilarious.
What? She's like, you're gonna get wrinkles, stop.
Selling Autumn out a little bit. I don't think that we go outside without her putting at least a small amount of suntan lotion. Not suntan lotion, but like some sort of sunblocker on, or sunblock with lotion thing. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
like,
Jess has so many bottles when she comes to stay. I'm like, what are these things? Yeah. And what do you do with them all?
Welcome to Don't Give Up Your Wives, the podcast where Chris and I just basically tell stories out of school about our girlfriends and wives. So
welcome to male ignorance.
Enjoy your stay. Edward kind of like rubs her face on Faye's leg and is like, wow. And Faye just is, you could tell she's just so fucking done with this kid. It's really great.
Yeah.
This is where Jet finally shows up at the bar, mm-hmm. Alyssa's bar, finds it kind of completely busted looking. It's totally empty except for one weirdo looking dude. There's nobody in it. It looks really, really run down. He asks the dude for Alyssa, and the dude's like, Alyssa isn't here. She left. And of course, Alyssa just walks out immediately afterwards.
Very casually reaching for a gun.
Yeah, just gonna literally just reach into my shirt for a gun. Like,
it's
come on, dude,
funny,
calm down.
That we find out this woman has dated both of the men in this scene.
Yes.
Because he's wearing this bright yellow, like, popped collar yellow jacket with his long cool 80s mullet. He's just like a pretty boy who belongs in Guns N' Roses or something. And then you got Jet, who's just a big old wall of meat.
It's funny too, because it's going to play into the end of the episode. Like, her choices mm-hmm. here are actually going to make sense. Like, this seems really weird at first, of like, if you had somebody like Jet, why would you ever date Rent? Who was his name?
Which, yes, fucking Rent.
Until they actually showed his name on screen, all in my notes I had him as Brent, which actually I think is funnier.
Fucking Brent. Like, that's Jet just like refusing to acknowledge his real name. Fucking
just
Brent.
Just keeps calling
here.
Him Brent or Bront or Bront, Bryant, like just constantly to his face.
So
Alyssa tells Brent to get gone, and they kind of sit down, and Jet, they basically kind of catch up a little bit. She says mm-hmm. that this is going to be my last, you're going to be my last customer. I'm shutting down the bar. Jet says, is it a money thing? And she's like, no, not really. Jet kind of asked about Rent, and she says that they're married and they have three kids, and you can tell that freaks him out, and she starts laughing at him because it's not true, but they are dating. So he is mm-hmm. a little kind of weirded out. And at this point, he can't help himself but to get a little serious, and he pulls out that steampunk pocket watch, and he flips it on the back, and there's just a beautiful picture of Joker, but dressed as Harley Quinn, and he's making out with Robin, who is dressed as Batman, and it's so good. And then he flips it over, and he asks her, do you remember? Which is a pretty powerful line. Like, we have no idea what's fucking going on yet. I think this is cool.
Yeah. He says, why so serious? And she she kicks him out of the bar.
And then we shut down this podcast forever. Why are we, why do we, what is this joke?
I don't know. He gets all serious on her. He pulls this out. But the best thing about this scene, which is already a great scene, is the quick flashes to her face while she's like pouring his drink, while she's talking, while she's doing whatever she's doing at the bar. These quick flashes to her face where it's not like the camera is panning to her. It's showing Jet and then it's like quickly spiking back to just her face, and then it'll show her doing what she's doing. Back to Jet. Quick flash to her face. Like, it's Jet stealing little glances of her. Yeah. Like, it's Jet, like, out of the corner of her eye, looking over at her face. He can't quite bring himself to make the full eye contact with her, but he's stealing these little glances, and it's such a cool little animation thing to do, I guess.
It's almost a cinematography thing to me. And interspersed with that is this shot of one of those, like, bird feeder kind of things that, you know, you put in a glass of water and it just has perpetual motion, essentially. It just always moves. And it's done as almost like a... I'm sure we've both been in situations like this before. Most people have, with a significant other, where you have these moments of awkward silences, and like you can hear a clock or you can hear something clicking in the background. All that ambient noise, which you would normally just completely ignore, starts coming to life. And I can only just imagine that bird, like, just click, 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 as they start stealing looks from one another, and neither one wants to say anything first because it's awkward and it's bad, and no one knows what to say. It just brings out the tension in the scene in such a great way.
And also, it's not the clicking or the ticking of a clock. It is this bird thing. This thing in perpetual motion that, at the same time, is perpetually standing still. It's them standing still in time. It's more specifically, it's Jet standing still in time. You know, he's done all of this movement, all of this lifting his head up back and forth, going back and forth. But after all these years, he's still standing in the same place. He's still standing in the place where he was when he saw her walk away, when he picked up the watch.
Meanwhile, back on the Bebop, Spike is kind of repairing the swordfish, and which I like seeing this, like, kind of daily life stuff a whole lot. When he gets a phone call from Jet's friend, who says, "Hey, I just want to give you a heads up. There's a bounty. Is this guy Rent?" We see a picture of him. It's of course Alyssa's boyfriend. Spike almost falls off the Bebop entirely as he's juggling screwdrivers and telephones and things in between, which is really funny. And basically, we learn that Rent was involved in some sort of altercation on the docks, and he ended up killing a local moneylender,
loan shark.
Loan shark, thank you. Moneylender, wow. Listen to me.
Same thing, I guess.
Yes, m'lady. Would you like to meet my moneylender? I enjoy this next scene because we see, again, we're talking about, like, just like kind of still life shots almost. Faye is like glowing platinum in the sun because she has oiled herself up so much. Edward is fishing. She pulls up like these weird three-headed gulls underneath the water, which look gross and bad. And then Spike takes just like shoots off with the ship to chase the bounty, and it blows everybody's hair off. And it's just really good. Like, I love these kind of moments where everyone's just chilling a little bit.
It just shows like Spike is so ready to jump into action when he's bored. Like, he just wants to get on his ship and fly away and blaze past everybody, while Faye is just the exact opposite route, and she's just chilling the fuck out.
Yeah, so he tries to call Jet. Jet does not answer the phone, obviously. He's busy having this conversation with Asia, where he's telling her, like, "Hey, you know, when we were together, I would come home every day and you would be waiting for me. And that's what I needed. I didn't need anything else but you. I just needed you to be there." And then one day he came home, he finds the pocket watch and the note that says farewell, and she's gone, and she doesn't give him any more information than that. And he says it almost didn't even feel like he was broken up with. Like, he felt it took him a while to kind of come to terms with any of this.
It didn't feel real.
And then he went totally numb. And then he said, "You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go and create a new life for myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go live this life, and if I'm not going to come here until this pocket watch stops." And of course the pocket watch is stopped, so he came back to Ganymede to come talk to Alyssa to find out why she left him.
It's interesting that he kind of set this limit for himself. Like he always planned on coming back. I don't think in Jet's mind he ever pictured himself moving on completely. Like, if he held on to this pocket watch in that way, that meant that he was still hanging on to the past. He was waiting for it to stop. He was waiting for the chance to come back and see if he could talk to her again.
And she tells him that, you know, that was a story from a long time ago, and she's completely forgotten about it. And she tells him very specifically as she leaves that time never stands still. Because, as you mentioned, he's been kind of frozen in time for this. He's been waiting for this moment and just not allowing himself to do anything but this. And now that it's here, she doesn't want to engage with this. This is his thing, almost.
He says in like such a sad way that he just wants to know why she left. And then her quote is something to the effect of, "The way you talk about it, you seem to think that time really has stopped here. That's a story from long ago, and I'd forgotten about it. Time never stands still." And then they hit you with this great, sad guitar song again.
I love all of this, by the way. If we haven't been effusive enough over this, I'm absolutely in love with this. Jet leaves, and as he's walking away from Alyssa, or as he's walking out of the bar, he notices Rent on the docks trying to light a cigarette. He doesn't know that Rent is remembering the night before where he was involved in this altercation with whoever this dude's name was, when he got a gun away from somebody and shot this dude, kind of in the heat of passion, right? In the heat of the moment.
Dude's not like a cold-blooded killer. He just was in a tough situation. And like the constant clicking of the lighter, it's like... so many great little things.
Yeah, little effect. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good.
Jet just walks off. We get this kind of very brief montage of Spike looking for Rent, and Spike just literally causing traffic jams because he's landing his swordfish in the middle of the street. So fucking good. And like talking to people trying to figure stuff out. I love that, man.
So inconsiderate.
He just does not give a shit. He doesn't care at all.
He doesn't even think about it.
Jet gets in his ship and leaves. Meanwhile, Rent is back in Alyssa's bar, kind of freaking out that when he finds out that Jet was a bounty hunter, saying it's all over. Alyssa reassures him, like, "Hey, this is not your fault. Like, I shouldn't have borrowed money from that dude. I put you in this situation, and we should get out of here. We should try to run." So they jump in this extremely cool looking. It's like, you know, we have those airboats down here that I'm sure you've seen, which are just giant fans on like this thinnest piece of aluminum you could possibly imagine between you and alligators. It's like a souped up future version of that. It's got two fans and thicker aluminum. It's awesome. It's a really cool boat. I was really into this thing for some reason. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, they just decide it's time for them to speed the frick out of there. But Spike is already on their heels, and I think that at this point Spike has almost crashed into Jet, if I'm not mistaken, because they're both coming in different directions. And
it happens in just a minute, because he has to, as they run into like this building that Spike can't find him, he has to fly straight up and then almost runs into Jet, which is again just like so funny to me for some reason. Like, it's just hilarious.
And he's like, "Hey, got this bounty. Gonna head after these people now." And Jet, I don't think he still has any idea what's going on.
No, not yet. And I think this time we get some more music playing here, which is always a lot of fun.
It's this great acoustic guitar throughout this entire episode. I love this. It's like seeping into every pore of this thing.
Jet, once he realizes that it's Alyssa and Rent that they're chasing, tells Spike to basically go away. Like, "Hey, I'll take care of this. I'm the black dog, and when I bite, I don't let go."
Yeah. "This was my old beat when I was a cop. I'm the black dog, and when I bite, I don't let go. I have no regrets about her, but I'll settle the score on my own turf."
And Spike understands this, and he's like, "Oh, justice and duty. I got it. I understand." So, and leaves him to it. So now it's just Jet and... Jet literally chasing his ex-girlfriend and her new boyfriend, which, if you kind of pull yourself back a little bit, like, "Yo, Jet, what you doing, dog?
Yo, ease up.
How long has it been since you've seen this girl?"
Maybe let Spike take this one. Yeah.
So Jet kind of demands that they pull over. They don't, of course. And then we get this great chase scene. I can't talk about how just amazing all of the action scenes in this are. Like, they're blazing through these small canals.
You get some first person stuff as he's driving the speedboat or whatever it is.
Man, it's so good. Like, everything behind it is so well realized. It's one of those things where I just wanted to pause and like repeat stuff on loops. Mm-hmm. So good.
And then we get all this cool stuff happening, and then Jet just catches him with a giant fucking hook that he shoots off the edge of his ship.
That's so awesome. Why doesn't Spike have a giant fucking hook? That's a dope thing to have on your spaceship, on your flying whatever.
Seems like it's pretty clutch.
It seems like it could be useful if you were trying to catch somebody, which is ostensibly their job.
Yeah. He like hooks onto the engine, and they just keep trying in vain to pull away until finally it just rips the engine right off of the boat, and they kind of just drift forward.
Yeah, and they kind of crash land into the side of this you know, seawall or whatever. Notably, mm-hmm. right as they were ripping the engines off, Alyssa reached over and picked up the gun, picked up Brent's yeah. gun as he was driving. So Jet lands the plane and walks over to him, and then she draws down on him and aims the gun at him. And it's a kind of standoff, and a police like flying ship thing arrives in the middle. But Jet is slowly but surely approaching her and does not stop, even though she has a gun pointed at him.
And that's when, you know, she's firing at his feet, but she's not really shooting at him. He's getting closer and closer, slowly approaching her. And he starts to say that, kind of deciding the situation for her, saying, like, you'll be an accomplice if you don't stop this right now. Like, I'm not going to drag you into this, but you need to put that gun down and you need to stop firing at me and step away from him. Otherwise, you're in trouble, too. And this is where, because she kind of, like, takes her whole thing out on Jet and says, that's just how you were back then. You decided everything. You were always right. I wanted to live my own life, make my own decisions, even if they were terrible mistakes. And in that moment, like, you kind of have to respect this woman. She had an easy life with Jet. She had probably had a good life with Jet, but it wasn't her own life. It was his life. This dude coming home every night after work, and she just had to be there for him, and he was always right about everything because that's the way that Jet is. He's this fatherly figure to everybody around him, and you have to figure he was probably like that with this woman that he was dating as well. And he probably never had bad intentions. He just wanted the best for people, but because of that, he was so stubborn, and he had the last call on everything, and it probably drove her away from him.
Absolutely, yeah, and that idea of I wanted to make my own decisions even if they were mistakes is very powerful. Like, you cannot tell somebody how to live their life no matter what. You may think that you're right, you may think that you know everything for them, but they have to be able to make their own mistakes. And like, that applies to not just these romantic relationships, but you know, that's your family, that's your friends, that's everybody, right? Like, you can't control anybody, and that's, you know, that's why it's difficult to be friends with people sometimes, because you know you want the best for them, but they just keep messing up. And it explains the difference in her choice of partner, because she would obviously like kind of flip and go from the stoic cop, you know, that with honor and duty, or is it justice and honor or justice and duty, that had this idea of the clear idea of right and wrong and would only pursue that, to probably the more hot-headed, excitable, but more passionate mm-hmm. for life, you know, criminal guy. who's probably not like an actual criminal, but, you know, just yeah. came up and, you know, without a lot of opportunities, I guess is what I would say. And it's kind of fascinating that this gets turned around on Jet. And I think Jet had no idea, right? And it's right. sad, because if she had told him this, you know, however many years ago, I don't think that it would have sunk in like it was sinking now that he's had time yeah. to reflect. Right. But I don't know. I'm curious to get your opinion on that.
It seems like Jet didn't realize any of this until this very moment. But he's in the position right now, even throughout this chase, seeing how desperately she wanted to get away from him, how desperately she was running for her life with this person who had made this bad mistake. It's like watching it all unfold before him, hearing her words. It finally has clicked in Jet's head. But in response to all that, he walks over to Rint and he punches him in the face when he tries to run away. Mm-hmm. But rather than just like, fuck you, buddy, she's my lady now, he's like, no, you need to be strong. You need to take care of her. You're not going to go to jail forever, you know, like, you're going to get off. I think he tells her after, like, he'll probably get off on self-defense or something. Like, it's not going to be the end of the world yeah. for these two. But this guy needs to stick by what he's done. Because mistakes are okay, but you have to own up to them. And not to push through it too fast, but Jet says, I don't think you'll be waiting very long because time never stands still. And he's finally sort of taken her lesson to heart. He's finally ready to let go of this portion of his life, and symbolically, obviously, he takes the watch and he tosses it into the water.
Have you ever, and if this is too personal, let me know, but have you ever been in a situation like this where you sort of pine over a girl and there's no communication between you, and then the first time that you meet, like, it's incredibly important to you, and that feeling of just like the punch in the gut when you realize you were not important to her whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like, and she mm-hmm. like, you have been spending all this time thinking of her, and then she has not been thinking of you at all. it's got to be one of those things where you start like questioning your life choices. Like, what could I have been doing with all of that energy and all of these things that I've been thinking, all of the times that I was like spent focusing on her? Who did I miss in my life? And I wonder if that's what's going through Jet's mind as all of this is happening.
And it's interesting in like those situations too, to have almost a similar but opposite reaction of like, oh, you spend all this time thinking about something, thinking it's important, and then you meet them face to face and you think, this doesn't matter.
Exactly.
This doesn't matter at all. What was I doing? Why did I care?
Yeah. All of a sudden, all of that disappears. Like you popped a balloon and it's like, whoa, right. Wait a minute. What's happening?
And it doesn't, you know, I don't want to say that Jet's balloon was popped, but it's almost like he woke up. He stopped dreaming. The dream is over. For better or for worse, the dream is over.
And in the final scene, he tosses the pocket watch into the water and walks away. Mm-hmm. What an incredibly dope show this is, Chris.
It's a very good show. It's a really good show.
I like the show a lot. This episode, like we said at the start, it's a really good non-origin episode. Like, they're not telling us, you know, specifically who Jet is, why he does all these things. Like, they kind of show us in the relationship and how it's revealed to us. I think it's really interesting, and the way that it lets the side characters be a part of this without necessarily them having like dramatic eyebrows furrowed kind of conversations about it, I think is the most interesting thing. Because ostensibly Spike just jetted. Faye doesn't know anything about this besides there was an ex. Like, it's not like they're gonna know anything about this. So like, right. They were around, but they're gonna come out of this not knowing anything more than they are. Did.
And that's the type of thing, it's like almost, you know, I think that they're obviously more than coworkers, but it's like if your coworker is like he comes into work the next day and he's a little bit run down, he goes, what's wrong, man? It's like, oh, girl trouble. It's like, oh, okay, whatever, hope you feel better, whatever, you know. You don't necessarily pry into these people even though you know what's going on, and it seems like they're all sort of like, they're just letting Jet take this one. They're not gonna pry, they're not gonna push, they're just gonna let him do his thing.
Yeah. What a cool show.
Yeah.
You have any final thoughts on these two episodes as a whole?
What a cool show.
That's good. That's a good one. Yeah, that's going to be it for this episode, I think. We're going to we'll be back with the next one, with the next two sessions of Cowboy Bebop. Chris, where are you at on Twitter nowadays?
I'm at Local Bones on Twitter.
I'm at JG Greer. You can find us together as a podcast at MOTWcast. This is a Monster of the Week's Presents podcast. If you like us, you will probably like the other stuff that we do. I don't know why I'm giving you this, because you're all patrons. You know exactly what we do. I'm sorry. I just went into an automatic thing. Thank you so much for supporting us. We love you. Thank you so much. You know where to find us. See you next time. See you, say Scout Boy.
Bye.